Welcome back to another chapter of To Honesty and Comeuppance, an Attack on Titan fanfiction written by yours truly, Tolstoy Ackerman. You can find this fanfiction by clicking on the link in my profile, which will take you to all of my works hosted on AO3, or by going to AO3 and searching for the title of this fic, or my pen name, Tolstoy Ackerman, two words. Standard disclaimer, I do not own Attack on Titan, I only own the original characters here within, and this is entirely non-for-profit. Thanks for coming back for another chapter. Without further ado, let's get into Chapter 35. Chapter 35, Entwined. Himmel slid in before Levi could change his mind, and as soon as she was under the blanket, he leaned over her to blow out the candle and obscure them in near darkness. He had drawn the curtains while she was showering, and despite having managed to get all of the stains out of them, she hadn't been able to do anything about all the little holes. The foot of the bed was dappled with lost stars, and as her eyes adjusted to the room, she felt Levi wrap an arm around her, pull her to him, and lose a hand in her damp, cool curls. They were eye to eye, and slowly she could see more than just his outline. He studied her as though she were a beloved home he hadn't visited in years, and now he sought out all of the differences the passage of time had brought. Tentatively, she rested a hand on his side. "Can you imagine," he whispered, "if this was our house, filled with our kids?" She could, and it was more painful than when he'd driven his blade through her earlier today. Himmel rested her forehead against his, fisting his shirt in her hand at his side. He said, "I thought by bringing you back to me, we'd get closer to that future, but every day it seems less like a future and more like a stupid dream." "No," she said immediately, "it's not a stupid dream. I want it too." His fingers in her hair drifted down to trace the outline of her jaw as he said, "My future isn't with the Sabakia." They were words that had always rested in the space between them, but it was the first time he'd ever spun them into reality. Even before he had left her, she had known that he couldn't love her when she ran around killing people left and right, even if it was for a good cause. He could love a killer, but not a wanton one. "When I get our people out of the Undercity, they won't need me anymore," she said. He sighed and stroked her cheek. "How the fuck are you going to do that when we can't even get outside of these walls?" "We will," she swore. "We'll tear them down if we have to. And when it's all done, we can have a peaceful life together." He stared at her for several long seconds, and then told her, "I've been drowning the whole damn week." She knew her touch was jagged to him, but she reached up to thread her fingers through his inky locks and tugged her bandana down to press her lips to his. As though he could only sustain himself with her, his fingertips tensed on her cheek, and he opened his mouth to drink from her. Her cursed smile relaxed for the first time in a week, and with it went the buzzing hive of worries and insecurities that had plagued her. The old bedframe creaked as he grabbed her by the hips and had her straddle him, not breaking in their starved kiss. Long ropes of golden curls hung down, enshrouding the two of them in a world where there was nothing but sun. Levi's hands were everywhere, caressing her cheeks, squeezing her breasts, and pinching her nipples until she arched into him, gripping her ass as he rolled his hips and his burgeoning want against the warmth pooling between her legs, and she was quickly forgetting how to breathe. Now he was reaching under her shirt, and she whimpered against him. She was so glad he was touching her. Whenever she thought about this, and she had thought about it often over the years, she had always imagined taking it slow, spending an entire sleepless night learning one another until there wasn't a single moan or sob that was unfamiliar. And yet, she mused, as he forced them to break the kiss as he pulled her shirt off and tossed it to the ground, and she hastened to free him of his pants, the concept of slow forsook them every time. They were sitting up now, vying for dominance with their tongues and teeth and fingers, almost as vicious as their spar earlier, and she had to remember to swallow down each mule and moan that threatened to spill out. One of his hands was fisted in the curls at the nape of her neck, and the other was dipping under her pants, down to where she was already calling for him. He drew in a sharp breath between his teeth when his fingers glided across her slick womanhood. "I've been ready since we fought," she whispered. Levi ducked down to suckle and nip at her neck as he slid his middle finger deep inside her and pressed his rough palm against her clit. She gasped and writhed against him, and he held her to him as he breathed against her neck. When you grabbed my hair and brought me to the ground right off the bat, I wanted to fuck you right there in front of everyone. She had waited a week. She had waited her entire life. She took his length in hand and pumped it roughly, causing him to bite off a groan low in his throat, and suddenly it was both his index and middle finger fucking her just as hungrily as she milked him. She wanted to show him exactly how much she loved his attention, but she dared not voice it when not one but two other bedrooms shared walls with theirs. Instead, she nipped his bottom lip and kissed him voraciously until their chests heaved against one another and she thought that she would die. "Please," she breathed. Levi withdrew his fingers and she gasped in dismay, but then he took his fingers, glistening with her nectar, into his mouth and sucked them clean, one by one. Her jaw dropped in shock, and instantly her body was hotter than a forge ready for the blade. "Not bad," he said, the hunger even sharper in his eyes than before. Levi shoved her onto her back, and she opened her mouth to rebuke him, but he had hooked his fingers under the waist of her pants and was pulling them off, exposing all of her to him and the stars that had slipped into the room through the holes in the curtains, and she was speechless. He was on his knees between her spread legs, a king plotting his conquest. Then he draped himself against her, the rough-spun cotton of his shirt rubbing against her sensitive nipples, his manhood resting against her core in such a tantalizing way that she grabbed his hips and writhed against him unconsciously. He was so very close to smiling, she could see the warmth in his dark eyes, and he kissed her to hide it. How silly that even here, when it was just the two of them, when he was so bold and unapologetic in every other area, he would be shy to show his happiness. It was one of a thousand reasons she loved him. He broke the kiss and began trailing his tongue and teeth down her neck, her collarbone, her breasts, her stomach, pausing to dip his tongue into her belly button and making her gasp. But then he continued lower, and excitement lanced through her as hot and dizzying as her incredulity. "Levi," she breathed in shock, "don't, it's dirty." He was on his knees between her legs, calloused fingers spreading her thighs. "But you love it when I get my hands dirty." She blushed bright red and put an arm up to hide her face, but he tugged it back down. He gazed at her womanhood up close, swirled his tongue against her inner thigh, and slowly began working his way closer to where her body called for him most. As he drew closer to the prize, he hooked her legs over his shoulders and swept his tongue up her wet lips and to her pearl, never breaking eye contact. Her entire body quivered, and she was too stunned to breathe. There was no way this was happening. She had dreamed of it, yes, but she had always thought that this would be too unclean for him. "Please, you don't have to—" "Who said you were making me do this? Just sit back and let me work." She couldn't believe it. Levi, who hated dirtiness above everything else, was between her legs and using his tongue to make her see God. She wouldn't have held it against him if he changed his mind. She knew better than anyone what manner of mess he could and couldn't tolerate. But he wasn't holding back. He lapped at her folds, drove his tongue into her, and sucked on her clit so hard she was clenching the sheets. Her entire body was screaming to be filled, and her hips were rocking slightly, begging him for more. Levi picked up on it immediately, but waited, toying with her more until she was thrashing against the bed, pleading with her eyes because she dared not open her mouth. "This is the only room I can make you obey me in," he mused. "I love seeing you so desperate." "Just wait for the payback," she said. "Oh, I look forward to it." He dove down again, laying siege to her clit, and then drove not one but two fingers deep into her without warning. She gasped, and only barely managed to bite back a moan. She could see the glimmer of amusement in his eyes again as he looked up at her from between her legs, and even that added fuel to the fire quickly burning out of control within her. He thrust in and out of her, curling his fingers deep within her each time as he swirled his tongue around her pearl. She wanted to rip him away and have him fill her with his waiting cock, but she also desperately needed him to stay exactly where he was. When he pressed down hard on her clit with his tongue as he added a third finger, stretching her almost to her limit, her entire body tensed and a strangled sound got caught in her throat. Levi paused his ministrations, and she could have wept, until he stretched his free hand up to wrap around her throat. His voice was as soft as it was dark. "Do you want the others to hear? Hush." He squeezed her throat, not enough to fully deprive her of oxygen, but enough to get her heart pumping even faster as he went back to work, sucking on her pearl as he drilled into her, each time hitting her core and making her body sing. The added thrill of him absolutely ruling her built, and in moments her legs trembled against him and she gasped and her world narrowed to consist of him and the pleasure he gave her. Levi withdrew his fingers from her as he loosened his hold on her neck and rose to tower over her. He sucked his digits clean one by one, and she watched, enraptured. She sat up and grabbed him so quickly he fell on top of her and made a muffled sound of surprise into her incensed kiss. She went to roll them over so she could be on top, but he caught on to her plan and broke the kiss and rose to his feet. He smoothed his hair and straightened his shirt, looking irritated. "Get a hold of yourself," he said. She gave him an impetuous look and rubbed the ball of her foot against his burgeoning want. Levi batted her foot away, and she pouted further. She writhed against the bed, begging him with her body to hurry. He grabbed her by the hips and dragged her to the edge of the bed before he pressed himself against her, and she rubbed her wet and ready pussy against him hungrily. "Ah, wait." He pulled back, and she hit the mattress with a fist, wanting to scream at him and throw him onto the bed and take him. Oh, he was so close to smiling she could almost taste it. He thrived on her frustration. "You like looking, don't you?" He was taking off his shirt, one button at a time, starting at the bottom to reveal those perfectly toned abs, followed by pecs that she could never, ever get enough of. He let the shirt fall to the ground and then resumed his position, pressed against her. "Are you going to stay quiet?" he asked. She nodded vigorously. "No matter what I do?" She nodded again. "Because if you do make a sound, I'll stop." She gave him a scandalized look. "Try me if you want." She shook her head and pleaded with her eyes for him to finally give her what they both wanted. In response, Levi took his cock in hand and ran it up and down her pussy, getting it wet and ready. He savored every movement, and then he positioned himself at her entrance and slowly, torturously, sank into her. He gave a soft sigh as though overcome with relief, while she gasped and she felt him return home, filling and stretching her to the brim with his heat. "This has been all I could think about all day," he whispered, bracing himself with either hand on her hips. "If not for the brats, I'd have fucked you in every room of this house today." It just wasn't fair that he could say the filthiest things imaginable while she had to be silent. She bit down on her lip and reached for his hands on her hips, desperate to touch any part of him. Levi set a brutal pace from the start, deep, fast, and so hard that she felt like it was as much a reward as it was a punishment for what she had done to him during their spar. She wanted to match him and rock against him, but his iron grip on her hips prevented her from moving at all. In turn, she sat up halfway so she could then feel the muscles of his chest under her fingers. "You're so greedy," he whispered. "Am I not giving you enough?" Not slowing, he slid one finger from her hip to her clit and pinched it. She came so very close to crying out. Her body lurched, and she dragged her nails down his chest. He was trying to remain his usual cool, reserved self, but she could see the cracks forming. The way his mouth dropped open as he watched her back arch and felt her nails dig into him, the way his fingers flexed against her thigh as though he were bracing himself in a maelstrom. He was pounding into her, filling her until he could go no further, and he still hadn't let up on her pearl. She threw herself back against the bed, writhing and clawing at the sheets as she fought to keep quiet, but when he suddenly changed his rhythm and pressed his thumb down on her clit, the softest mule left her lips as pleasure ripped through her for a second time. He scrunched his eyes shut for a moment as she clenched down around him, but then sighed and withdrew from her. She looked up at him, utterly distraught. "I said I'd stop," he said. "Oh, hell no." With speed that surprised even her, she sat up, grabbed him by the hips, and took his entire cock into her mouth. Now it was his turn to gasp, and she took a second to orient herself and figure out what she was going to do next. She hadn't really planned this out. She could barely fit him into her mouth. If she pushed her nose against his stomach, the head of his cock would bump into the back of her throat. She fought back the automatic reaction to gag, and instead swallowed. Levi's eyes rolled into the back of his head for a moment, and she smiled around his cock. She had never given a blowjob before. Her smile had never allowed it, but she was glad that she could have a first with Levi. The way their tastes mingled together in her mouth intoxicated her, and she wondered how far he would allow her to push him. She bobbed her head up and down slowly, taking time to loop her tongue around the head of his cock each time she withdrew. He seemed content to let her experiment for a little, as he gave a little sigh and threaded his fingers in her curls. "A bit more like this," he said, and then he began thrusting his hips gently into her mouth, setting the rhythm and depth. She committed it to memory instantly, and she cupped his balls in one hand while she wrapped her index finger and thumb around the base of his cock tightly. He hissed as he dug his fingers into her scalp, and she gave a soft hum around him as she took him as deep as she possibly could, bobbing there with the head of his cock hitting the back of her throat repeatedly. Then she released the firm grip she'd had around him and went full speed from head to tip. It was then that he let out a soft but undeniable groan. She immediately backed away, her lips making a soft pop as his cock left her mouth, a little bit of his cum and her spit dripping down her chin as she smiled up at him. "You couldn't stay quiet, so I stopped," she said. His look turned purely diabolical as he pounced upon her, kissing her viciously as he hastily found her opening and thrust himself back into her warmth. She gasped as he fucked her slow and deep, as though he wanted to feel her every inch, and she thought she would die. More. She needed more of him. She wrapped her legs around him, inviting him even deeper inside her. They both shivered as he reached a new part of her, and she begged him with her eyes to stay right there. He kissed her and drove into her again and again, hitting that spot that made her entire body alight. She could feel that intense pleasure coiling inside her, ready to spring forth and shake their entire world, and she fought to keep breathing and not cry out his name. "Come for me," he said. She was embarrassed by just how much his strained voice affected her. He must have known she wouldn't be able to fully remain silent, because he smothered her soft moan in a sloppy kiss as her entire body trembled around him. He picked up the pace, becoming desperate, and she rocked her hips with him as she squeezed his ass and urged him with her body to let go completely. The quietest of moans left his open lips, and he scrunched his eyes shut. "Fuck," he breathed shakily, and then he buried his head in her chest as he jerked his hips, filling her with his devotion until she could take no more. She wrapped her arms around him and kissed the top of his head before he propped himself back up, and they shared one more sated, languid kiss. He withdrew from her after a few moments, and before she could catch his cum with a hand, he grabbed her by the wrist and rolled her around so they were on their sides facing one another. "I can't believe you," she whispered. "What?" "You being such a clean freak, I didn't expect you'd..." He grabbed her leg and threw it over his. "We're washing the sheets and bathing first thing tomorrow." She gave a soft laugh into his chest. "Yes, sir." "I want to see how long I can wipe that smile from your face," he said, tracing her lips with a finger. She kissed him and said, "I never would have thought you could give that to me." "I'm still not convinced this isn't some trick of yours to make me feel special." "Oh, the 'you're the first man who's ever made me' shtick?" She smiled softly. "You deserve better than such a stupid trick." "You are the first woman I've ever eaten out, though," he said, "so be grateful." "You didn't have to." "I wanted to." He kissed her once more on the forehead. "Now sleep." "It's you who's sleep-deprived," she muttered, even as she nestled further against him and relaxed. Morning stole in swiftly. The starlight invading through the old curtains had faded to the tired glow of pre-dawn, and Himmel opened her heavy eyes to take in the man holding her. His hair was still askew from last night, and she reached up to skate her fingers against his scalp and smooth his longer locks. Eyes still closed, he took in a deep breath and leaned closer to rest his forehead against hers. "Crimson lilacs," he murmured. "There's no such thing," she said, smiling. He took a handful of her curls and draped them over the two of them like a blanket, anything to keep the world away for a little longer. But the world had never let them be, and today was no different. There were footsteps on the floorboards of the hallway outside, and they knew that Hanji and a couple others had woken up. They were to leave before sunrise, and that was only an hour away at most. They knew they had to go back to being soldiers, but before that, they shared one more kiss that was both greeting and farewell. Then they untangled themselves, bathed with washcloths and the water basin, and got fully dressed. Under his ODM gear, he had tight brown trousers and an off-white shirt that hugged his frame. Though the day was only beginning, it was clearly going to be hot. The muggy air was already seeping into the dim room. Himmel found herself gawking at him as he rolled up his sleeves. "What?" he said, frowning. "You need to put on more clothes," she said, as she ducked down and pretended to be occupied with her boots to hide her flushed cheeks from him. "What about you, running around in just an undershirt?" he countered. "It's a wonder none of the boys died of blood loss." "They don't think of me like that," she said, scandalized. "You're so used to having eyes on you, you don't notice," he said. He stripped the mattress of its sheet and replaced it with a fresh one, while Himmel buttoned up her black blouse over the dark tank top in question. Then she bundled all her curls away under a large bandana, hid her nose and mouth under a smaller one, put on her new ODM gear, and slipped her original sword sheaths into leather holsters on her back. The original hilts went into a pouch on her hip, and the blades themselves into the blade boxes. She took in the ODM gear handles and studied the third trigger. "Why'd you ask Hanji to make those modifications to the handles?" Levi said. "I believe weapons work best when they're misused." He folded the dirty sheet and put it in the basket with the other laundry and went downstairs while she knocked on all the bedroom doors to make sure everyone was up. After a quick breakfast, two of Hanji's men were put on watch in the barn for the next messenger, and everyone else headed into the forest to the west of the house, following Himmel's lead. Only a few dozen meters behind the outhouse and the forbidden tool shed grew a thick forest that covered the three mountains that spiked up several kilometers further west. "This place is shit for ODM gear," Levi said, as they wound their way through the close-knit trees. The trees weren't as big around as those in the Titan Forest, and they were dense and full of prickly, uninviting conifers. "Means the enemy can't use their gear either," she said. "They could hunt us like deer, though," Sasha said. A couple of the kids shot her a terrified look, and Sasha herself looked a little unsettled as she clenched the bow hooked over her shoulder. She wasn't wrong, and everyone knew it. "We should make sure not to use the same path to go back and forth to the mountains," Sasha continued. "Don't want to make a trail for them to find." If there were somewhere that Himmel and Levi lacked experience, it was living in the wilderness. On countless supply runs, Himmel had been humbled by Sasha's expertise in all things outdoors, and she deferred to her without question regarding such matters. "All right, we'll take a different route home. Thanks, Sasha," Himmel said. "It's been a while since you've used a bow, hasn't it? If you see an animal, practice on it." "There's a restriction on hunting," Hanji said. "We're all outlaws now," Levi said. "Might as well keep ourselves fed." "How long do you think it'll be until they find us?" Mikasa asked. Levi said, "Erevan won't crack. Neither of our messengers will, nor will the Starks. As long as the messengers are living with the Starks, their comings and goings from the barn shouldn't raise suspicions. If the cave in the mountains really will conceal the lightning from Eden's transformation, then I imagine we can keep this up for some time. But if the lightning is visible, it's only a matter of time. We're on the edge of civilization, but the interior MPs must be searching high and low," Himmel said. "I'd say a month is a stretch." Levi said, "How'd you get this land, anyways? Is it anything they could trace back to you?" They had done such a good job of putting aside the uglier side of her, and Himmel hated that it was being dragged out into the sunlight again. Still, it was an important question that deserved a truthful answer. "One of the regulars at the chutes asked me to take care of a problem on this farm," she said, as she eased herself over a fallen tree. They were entering the mountains now, and the incline was steep, but not unbearable. "The chutes?" Connie said. "It's a place in Undercity Mitras for lowlifes to watch other lowlifes beat the shit out of each other," Levi said. "Rich upsiders like to go down and watch the wretches bludgeon each other and bet on who will survive with the least brain damage." Himmel continued, "And I make friends with some of those rich upsiders, and sometimes they ask me to take care of problems. That's how I became friends with the man with the mining gear who made me the tunnel to here as well." "So who was the person that asked you to handle the farm?" Mobleed asked. "And what was there to handle?" Hanji wanted to know. "I won't get any new clients if I can't maintain confidentiality. Something distressing was happening on this property, and I was asked to put an end to it before word got out. Given the nature of the problem, the client wanted nothing to do with the land afterwards and offered it to me as payment for my work and my silence." Her vague description had piqued even Levi's interest. The hot, soupy air grew heavier with everyone's curiosity, and Himmel wished she had chosen to lie instead of giving the truth. "You can't just leave it there," Connie said. "Who are we going to tell, anyways?" Jean said. Some things are best left to the imagination, Himmel said. What was it, Mel? I'm not trying to save my image or anything. I'm telling you, you don't want to know, she said. It was a noble who hired me, and the problem was of such a degree that they would rather go to the gallows than speak of it, or of my involvement. You don't have to worry about the MPs finding out. The deed is still in a third party's name as well, so it's tied to neither of us. What can be worse than the shit we've seen at Trost or Shiganshina? Eren said. Did you have to clean up someone like me? Historia's emotionless question felt like a crossbow bolt to the lung, and Himmel leapt to say, No, it wasn't that sort of thing. I swear on my life, I don't take those jobs. Just come out with it already, Levi said. She knew from his tone that he wasn't going to let it go, and Himmel sighed. You can't tell anyone about this. It will ruin lives. Everyone swiftly made vows of silence, except for Levi, who was taciturn enough not to require a promise. The client's son lived in this house with his wife, six children, and a couple farmhands and maids. He had always been a little eccentric, but such is the way of the nobles. The client sent him out here so he wouldn't create gossip in Mithras. One day, the client stopped receiving letters from the daughter-in-law and sent a servant to the farm to check on the family. What he saw was so terrible that the client showed up at the chutes immediately asking for my assistance. The son had gone mad and killed the farmhands and maids, hung them from butcher hooks in the barn, and was preparing them in various ways. The servant had fled before he could confirm the safety of the wife and children. My job was to kill the son and destroy all evidence of what he'd done, lest the family's name be ruined. It was very quiet but for the crinkle of leaves underfoot and wind in the trees. Despite the heat, Himmel shivered as she remembered that day. What happened to the wife and kids? Were you able to save them? Armin said. Her heart sank further, and she found herself chewing on her lips under her bandana. You couldn't, could you? Levi said heavily. The job was to destroy all evidence. She nodded. The wife was dead already. Three of the kids were too old, but the other three were young enough that they wouldn't remember, so I found a family to take them in as their own. The Starks always wanted children but couldn't, and they'd been kind to Levi and me in the past, so I got them the house outside Yarkel and gave them the kids. I misjudged you earlier, Levi said. Himmel knew that he was referring to how upset he'd been over her obtaining this house through a hit job. Now that the gruesome details had come to light, he understood that she hadn't taken the job out of greed. She had been told there was a family with children in grave danger, and she had done what she could to help them. The property had been nothing more than an afterthought to her. Now the reason for its state of disrepair and disuse was clear as well. She hadn't wanted anyone to have to live in a place where such atrocities had occurred, and she had been satisfied to let it crumble while she used the barn, the tunnel, and the shed only. You killed three kids? Connie said in disbelief. They didn't do anything wrong, Armin said, a rare flash of anger in his voice. Why didn't you put them in hiding with their siblings? Himmel sighed. Don't you think I would have done that if I thought that I could? They were broken beyond repair. It was one of the most horrible things I've ever seen. Sometimes you want to save people, but they're too far gone, and it's kinder to let them rest. Something could have been done for them, Armin said. His words fluttered like black moths inside her, each brush of their wings whispering that, yes, there is always more that can be done. You should have thought harder. You should have tried harder. You should have saved them. No, Jean said, quietly but resolutely. You're wrong, Armin. I'm sure she would have saved them if she could. Of course, he had gone with her down to Trost. He had seen her make the difficult choices that the Sabakia had to, and he had understood. It seemed as though it were years ago. It was a relief to have at least one ally among the kids. The cave is up here, Himmel said, jogging up the slope. The trees grew sparser the higher they climbed, and while there were still quite a few, they had more room to maneuver and use their ODM gear. Eren would also have free range of movement in the open area at the mouth of the cave. How the fuck did you know there was a cave up here? Levi asked her. The kids hid here, she said. Himmel beckoned for Hanji and Eren to follow her into the cave. She took out a sword, just in case there was an animal waiting in the dark, and while there were some deer bones, there was no evidence of the cave being used recently. They looked up at the high cave ceiling and decided it was just about 15 meters high. There was a chance that Eren would hit his head on the roof, or maybe even burst through it, but that was a risk he was willing to take. Hanji took over now, issuing directions to everyone. All of them got up into trees near the cave. Mobley'd had a sketchpad at the ready, and Hanji was prepared to instruct Eren once he transformed. The goal today was to see how many times he could transform consecutively. Himmel was standing on the mouth of the cave, prepared to jump in and help get Eren out if something went wrong and the rock collapsed. Mikasa was upset that she hadn't been chosen for this role, but Himmel was the only one who could get crushed and come out okay. Eren entered the cave and stood under the place where the ceiling was highest. In the next moment, there was a stupendous surge of energy, and the air smelled of plasma. The green and yellow lightning crackled and roared, not down, but up, straight through the stone and high into the sky. How the fuck hadn't they noticed that the lightning came from the person and not from the sky? The cave meant nothing, and now their time was even more limited here. Thankfully, the cave didn't collapse. Eren had to crawl out of the opening, but then he rose to his full height of 15 meters. It had been quite some time since Himmel had seen him transform. In fact, now that she thought about it, she had never been this close to him when he was transformed. She had lost herself at Trost and came to after he had sealed the hole, and Levi had carried Eren while she carried Mikasa and Armin. The next time he had transformed was in the Titan Forest, but Annie had already bitten him out of his Titan. She hadn't given him a chance to transform, and Reiner and Bertolt took them away, either. She found his Titan form captivating. She had breathed in the steam of the Colossal, ridden on the shoulder of the Armored, grabbed Ymir by her hair and ripped her out, and stood in the throat of the female after beheading her in Stohess. She had touched all of them but Eren, and she was amazed by the spectacular green of his eyes. The female Titan had had Annie's eyes, just like Eren had his, but his burned with something that called to Himmel. He was standing outside of the cave, but rather than facing Hanji and all the others, he had turned to look straight at her on the roof of the cave, eye to eye. There was a hot breeze stirring the damp air, and he outstretched his fingers towards her. In some far corner of her mind, Himmel was aware that people were raising their voices. She couldn't hear what they were saying, though, and she didn't care. Her consciousness was adrift in verdant pools. With surprising gentleness, he rested the pad of his index finger against her cheek and pushed the bandana hiding her blonde curls down so that they all spilled out into the morning sunlight. The heat from his touch was 1,000 times what the Armored's had been, and it scalded her with the ferocity of the sun, intent on scorching the earth to create it anew. She gasped and hissed as it spread through her from her cheek and down her throat, into her chest like warm syrup, and Eden's eyes flared wide. He could feel the transfer as well. He could feel that something was beginning. They both knew that she had to get to the source. Once she did that, everything would fall into place. Eren wrapped his fingers around her, as though she were the stem of a rare and delicate flower. She was enveloped in the heat that radiated out of him, and it melted away all thoughts and emotions other than the very dire need to reach the source. Reverently, he plucked her from the roof of the cave, held her up high above him, and opened his mouth wide. Deep in his throat stretched all of time, intricately coiled and waiting for the right moment to unfold, and she was overcome with excitement, knowing that she had the chance to entwine herself. When he slackened his hold and she began to fall straight into his stretching maw, Himmel laughed. And that's the end of the chapter. A little bit of a cliffhanger for you. I hope that you liked it. Bet you're wondering what the hell's going on. Sound off. Feel free to go to AO3 and leave a comment sounding off what you think might be happening. Always love to hear from listeners and readers. And yeah, I'll keep it at that. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.